I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program was brought to you by the Christmas Tree Farmers Association of New York, partnering with Grow NYC on a pilot project to make farm fresh trees and wreaths available at green markets. For more information, visit ChristmasTreesNY.org.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Under the white chalk, drawn on the blackboard, under the x-ray.
It's coming to you live from the parking lot outside Trois Familia on beautiful Sunset Strip. I guess this is not the Sunset Strip that people think of when they think of L.A.
No.
I'm here with John and Vinny of Many Restaurant, Famousness Animal, Son of a Gun, John and Vinny's, Tua Familia, and the list goes on. Welcome to Snacky Tunes, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
So the new restaurant, Tua Familia, gangbusters from the gate. What made you guys, you know, I mean, we can get back to the beginning of how it all started, but as your new iteration, what made you want to open up in Silver Lake and especially this part of Sunset?
Well, John and I have always loved Silver Lake, and the right opportunity just never really came our way. I think before we opened Animal, we were sort of looking out here, and nothing really came our way that seemed like a good opportunity for us. And, you know, five restaurants later, we ended up, this space was a call to Ludo via a broker. Found out that this woman was looking to retire and get out, and we knew the space. John and I are big fans of El Cochinito, which is one of our neighbors. One of the first restaurants we ever even ate at here when we moved to Los Angeles. So we knew the area. John and I used to live on Normandy and Fountain. Mm-hmm. So we hung east side a lot. Yep. And we've always loved it out here, and I think it's a great community and people that have already supported our restaurants, and we're happy that we can kind of be a part of this neighborhood now.
We actually, believe it or not, lived also on Normandy and used to romp in Silver Lake all the
really?
Time.
Is this back at the beginning?
Back in the very beginning days of our catering career, and actually did a little bit of cooking out of the house for a short minute on Normandy.
Totally on code, right?
Totally under.
Well, now radar. It's legal to do. When we were doing it, was actually illegal, but
yeah, but it was small fry. It's definitely not like we weren't like. Doing mass.
We were throwing like taco parties at people's like weddings.
We'd also throw some mean parties there.
I'm sure you did. Yeah. So let's go back to the beginning. How long have you two known each other?
Wow.
15 years, I think, is our relationship.
And 15, it's well, yeah, 15 years.
So, you know, partners who have been partners for this long, did you like see each other and knew that? Did you have that at first sight type of thing? That
well,
partnership?
You know, we had a solid friendship, I would say, within the first day.
We were into a lot of the same things. We kind of grew up in similar household background sort of thing. And we just connected, honestly, like we connected on cooking and food. We both loved it. We both loved the energy of the kitchen. We were wide-eyed, like, you know, hyped up kids that wanted to just cook all day. And that
in
was
a weird
it.
Way. We kind of pushed one another, like, without probably even realizing it, because the other person was always, I mean, we were so into it. I mean, we ate hundreds and hundreds of meals together and
still
we were
do.
In culinary school together.
Right.
And we worked in the same restaurants together majority of our culinary career outside, you know, after high school. You know, we both had a short, we both dabbled into it in high school, you know, when we had to get jobs totally separate. And, you know, it's amazing that it's still going.
I mean, you know, back in 2000 and that early time, food was not what it is now. So did you find, like, the conversations you were having were different than the way other people were talking about food?
Well, food's just changed. It's like,
yeah.
You know, I think guys have found ways to make really delicious food more approachable and mm-hmm. less expensive, right? So it's sort of like, you know, the fine dining and the grand cuisine and all of, you know, haute cuisine and all these trends and things that kind of came through. And the 90s was a good time to cook, I think. Like, people didn't rely now on, you know, like we do on social media and, you know, blogs and
also, like,
Eater.
And it's funny because, like,
food was always good, though, was what my point.
You know, like, one of the big food trends now is, like, being, like, super hyper local with your ingredients.
Yeah.
And, like, which is a little bit of a tongue twister, sorry.
Super hyper local, yeah.
But it's like in the 90s, it was only just about, like, just the best ingredients. Getting the best ingredients
to wherever
you were at. And, like, you know, and, like, so, I mean,
we've been talking about that a lot again. Yeah. We've been like, let's just get the best stuff. Like, yes, local's great and it's awesome and we love it. But let's just try to make the most delicious food.
Yeah. Totally. And listen, you try for local when you can.
We don't beat people over the head with it.
No. I mean, I think it got to the point where you see people who just take that trend and are just trying to show that they're the best of that trend and not actually making the best food possible.
Great chefs are great shoppers.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, I think, like, I love that aspect of it, of finding, like, really cool, interesting ingredients. Like, we buy ingredients from Japan. We buy ingredients from the UK. We buy stuff from our backyard. You know, it's like we aren't too hung up on that side of things. It's like the most important thing to us is that the food tastes good. And I think, like, if there's one thing to say about all of our restaurants, like, you can find something at every one of them. Would you agree with every dish? No, I didn't, right. You know, but there's something delicious on there for everybody at every restaurant.
So when you guys, you have this friendship, you have the same feeling about food, what was the decision to move to LA? Like, who, did one of you bring it up first?
By chance.
Yeah, we were trying to move to San Diego, actually. That's funny.
I think you dodged the bullet then.
We did.
Maybe we didn't. You know what I mean? Like, you never know. Like, life always gives you, you know, curves. And, like, I mean, we weren't planning on necessarily having a place in Silver Lake, you know, eight months ago. It's like, but the opportunity came through. And, like, you know, it's always fun to work with Ludo, and, like, it just made sense for us all to do it, you know, between the three of us, you know what I mean? Like, so,
there was no clear shot of, like, and, like, LA is the next destination. It just, we were living in Colorado. John and I were living in Vail with,
that we would see the kind of success that we have had here in LA. I mean, I feel every day, like,
no way.
I feel so fortunate, you know, it's like, I think a lot of people don't realize, like, you know, how hard we still work on it, and, like, how hard we worked on it before we even got to this point. Like, I feel like I don't work as hard as I did then, but it was like,
it's different work,
different kind of work.
It's a different kind of, I mean, and I think the tough thing is as you guys grow the restaurant and grow things and the business grows, it's a lot easier to look at, like, a pile of potatoes that you've diced or cut or
mashed. But I'm just saying it's always changing.
It's always changing.
And, like, that same goes with, like, the way that we work as a team. It's like things are always changing, you know. It's like, and, you know, at the end of the day, it's like we constantly are evolving, and, like, I think that's our goal with the restaurants. And all because we ended up here in LA and not San Diego doesn't mean that we would have had the same kind of response, you know. What I'm saying is we work for it.
I mean, but one could argue that you are the two guys who have helped ushered in this new, like, the way that people see the LA food scene.
I mean, it's always honoring when somebody says that to me, but
I know that you guys can't say that, but I'm saying, just, you know, I can say from being on the East Coast and hearing about Animal and what was going on, that was one of the first restaurants that really started, and not at the fine dining level, to start making away something that, like, I want to get to LA and try this restaurant.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, it's so weird, like, I mean, we're flattered that people even think of us as, like, something that setting a trend, you know. I think, like, we really honestly, like, we opened that restaurant because we wanted to serve food that we love to cook, and we wanted to service that neighborhood, and that was, like, it. That was like there's other restaurants that are around us that are really good. They're a little bit more fancy than us. Let's just try to do something that feels a little younger and more like who we are and what cooks really like to do, and, like, kind of keep it interesting in that sense for them and for us and for the diner. And that was the goal. And it was like, we were making mistakes left and right, but we were figuring it out as we went along. And we didn't know it was going to be what it is now. And, you know, it's hard when you get, like, when you get that popular. I think the hardest thing to see happen for us has been the dilution of it.
Yeah.
The, like, sort of, like, guys that, like, think they understand what the whole process was behind that, and, like, the amount of work that we put into what those dishes were and what they made people feel, I think, wasn't something that is easily as copied as it actually is. It's like, people are doing it all over the place, but I think that, like, what makes a food scene interesting is the diversity, and LA is now becoming more diverse.
Right.
Guys are kind of like, I don't want to do that. I want to do something else, which is great. And that's what we want as a community. We want people doing more different things and servicing everybody in their neighborhoods, and, like, kind of bringing a different sort of idea and flavor to those neighborhoods is what's good. It's when you have things like what we're doing, and then people, like, right around the corner trying to just knock it off because popular there.
Right.
That's not a good food community.
No.
That's why New York has always been so amazing. It's like, guys are always like, oh, they went that direction, I want to go that direction.
I mean,
and that's what's always pushed that place. And I think, you know, we're now seeing it again. Now guys are sort of like, okay, we can't we can't keep doing what Animal did, or, you know, the Son of a Gun one is the one that's funny to us because it's like, you know, we felt there was a lack of, you know, quality seafood restaurants in LA. Seafood's difficult in Los Angeles. There's not a lot of local fish here, but you can get anything you want because it's such a major city. But it's actually really bad, you know, bring it down to the business model. It's actually a really bad business model. It's like seafood is one of the things that's depleting faster than anything else. It's more scarce every day. The costs go up every day. It's hard to run a really hardcore seafood-driven menu is what I'm saying. And it's interesting to see people still opening these places like, you know, the Pokey thing right now. It's like
Pokey thing's huge.
It's crazy. And you're like, you're literally just giving people a bowl of fish and rice, and it's like, that's not sustainable at all.
No,
it's kind of crazy. And it's like, tuna is like one of the least sustainable things out there, and it's just being like just killed. So I don't know, we're kind of, it's an interesting thing, you know. It's like, we, you know, started out here at Tua Familia, and we were like, you know, brunch is like a thing out here.
I know.
And we were like, let's capitalize on that, not only for us, but for the community. You know, it was like, these people, they want more places and more options to go. People all the time ask us, the other place people ask us to go is the West Side. And you kind of, I always look at people and I'm like, you guys have so many great restaurants over there. Like, you really want us to come over there? And they're like, yes, we want more diversity.
Yeah.
And that's what's good. You know, you don't go down there and copy Travis or Suzanne. It's like, you go down there and do your own thing.
Exactly. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to talk more about the diversity, especially within your own restaurants. We have a song from Oberhofer coming up that was live on Snacky Tunes. And we're sitting in the car outside Tua Familia, live on the show.
And I'll just keep on stumbling. Right now it feels too humbling to tell you what I want. And the city's feeling queer and crass, with beer cans growing blades of grass to look like something new. Whoa, oh, 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 oh. You love me, but I'm just too damn hungry for loving that I don't need. And I know that you like my shoes, but you wish you could count for every inch and every ounce of everything that you meet. And you'll die by the time you're 30. Slytherin snakes and garden rakes don't got what it takes to give you what you need.
Back to Snacky Tunes, here with John and Vinny of Tua Familia, Petit Tua, Animal, Son of a Gun, John and Vinny's. Did I miss anything? It's all five, right?
Tua Max. Six.
Six.
Six now, yeah.
Six. So, I mean, you know, I think one could look at your restaurants and you're talking about diversity and see the common theme of how you approach each restaurant, but each restaurant's so different. I mean, you have French bistro to a Mexican French brunch place to an Italian place. Like, how do you decide what the next product is?
Well, I mean,
I
think part of it is, you know, like, it depends. Like, yeah. For the stuff that we've done with Ludo, it's like, that obviously, it's like we've worked as a team, the three of us, and really kind of develop what we all think makes sense. And, like, you lean on people's expertise. And, like, you know, Trois Mac, you know, was something that I think we all were, you know, interested in adding to the L.A. food scene. And then, you know, Petit Trois just made the most sense. It's like, I mean, why would you not open this, like, cool little French bistro? You know, Ludo, obviously, you know, being... he's actually getting knighted, I think.
No.
Yeah, next week.
Like Sir Ludo?
I believe.
Something.
Some cool award that I'm psyched for, but it's like...
Makes him, like, more French than he already is.
How did that partnership come about?
Just I mean, we're just cooking together in L.A. We really felt like... I mean, we're like, man, this guy is so talented. Like, it's unbelievable that he doesn't have a place to call home, that, like, he feels comfortable, that he can do whatever he wants. It's his call. His shots, and that's what he does.
And, like,
and that's what we just wanted to help him. Like, honestly, like, that's how the relationship started. It was like, you're too talented and you're too important for LA to not have you in a place where people can find you all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, because I've gone in there.
The Ludo Bites thing was just nuts. It's like,
yeah, I mean, the pop up's always great, but it's got to lead to something. And I mean, I feel like I see Ludo in the kitchen
all the time,
as much as I see you guys in the kitchen. Like, it's never like it's just his name on the door.
Yeah, he's serious. He's very, very serious. And, you know, that's the projects with him have been really fun and, like, you know, obviously.
And hard, you know, like, it's been hard. Like, when we went to go do Trois Mec, you know, it was the first time we were working together. But then not only that, but it was sort of understanding each other on that level. But there was this sort of, like, we wanted to do something really new for the dining scene of Los Angeles and, like, a new restaurant model with a special cuisine that spoke to who Ludo is and what LA is and what his influences are. And I think it was like, we went everywhere from like 3 courses to 18 courses to, you know, $300 a person to $50. We found this like middle ground that seemed to be just perfect for the size space it was. Yeah. And like John
said, Ludo wanted to keep it affordable.
Yeah.
It was like
yeah.
one of his things. It's, and like, I mean, it's not cheap, but it is like, you could afford to go. Anybody can really save to go there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At any price point in what you make, because it is still approachable food, like price point for what is considered somewhat fine dining environment.
And how did, I mean, having your partnership for so long, where I'm sure you guys can like share a look and know what the other person's thinking, how do you bring someone in, like a third partner like that?
You learn. I mean, you learn how to work together. And it's like, I mean, now like going into this place, I think it's like, I mean, it shows, I think, and overall kind of just the environment. I mean, this Trois Familia kind of worked out so smoothly, and it's like, cause the three of us are becoming so good at working together, you know, and that's something that me and Vinny obviously have had, you know, and now we've added a third person in the mix on those projects. And like, we hope to add more people, you know, like we hope to kind of, you know, me and Vinny, I think one of the things that we talk a lot about is becoming kind of this place that could harbor a lot of, you know, great talented people and talented restaurants and concepts in a group, and it's something that we're working towards.
A lot of talented people in our industry get into bad situations.
Yeah.
And like, we want to come at it from like, we want to support people's ideas, and we're going to be super selective about who we work with, but I think that there are talented people out there that just don't find themselves in the right environment, you know, and they don't get supported. And we want to do that for people like Ludo and help them sort of understand what they want to do with their restaurants, you know, and like what our experiences that we've had and the things that we've learned and the mistakes that we've made and how we can sort of take and grow from there.
Do another place with Ludo next year, you know, that out in the valley, another Petit Trois. I mean, that was our goal, and actually how we found this place.
Yeah.
It's because we were looking for another Petit Trois, and like, we don't have a spot yet, but you know, we're constantly looking, and it's only a matter of time. Is it going to open next year? Who knows? You know, like, depends on the location. It's like, but our goal is by the end of next year, not this year, end of next year, to have a space, and we could do a Petit Trois. And it's like, it makes sense. Ludo lives in the valley. There's a lot of people out there that are just dying for some good food that come already to Petit Trois. Petit Trois, it's like we haven't done a replica of one of our restaurants, and it's going to be the first time that we attempt it. But, like, we hope to do the same with John and Vinny's, and, like, maybe not to the Valley, but it's like, you know, I know that a lot of people from the west side have asked us to put a John and Vinny's over there, and, like, you know, our hope is that we can, you know? It's like, whether that happens in 2 years,
17, 18,
you know, like, 10 years, like, we don't know, you know? It's like, but that's what we're all talking about right now.
So let's talk about Trois Familia. I mean, you know, as you mentioned before, brunch has become sometimes a hated word by chef, but a loved thing by people go to it. I mean, when I heard, or when anyone heard French Mexican brunch, it was just like, what was that? So how did that idea come? I mean, and if, having eaten there, it works so perfectly.
It works. It's like, we kind of thought there were a lot of like interesting parallels, you know, like the way that I think it's a lot of like technique and some basic ingredients, you know?
Yeah.
And then sort of like, how can we make it interesting, but make it approachable? Like, you kind of...
It's not
We didn't want to...
It's not literal.
Yeah,
it's one thing that people have to always, like...
Right.
It's not a literal termination, but... Or a literal translation of... It's, you know, kind of like our play on it. You know what I mean? And it's
we didn't want to be... We knew what we didn't... We started, like, kicking the ball around, and we didn't want to, like... We knew that there were so many taco places that were, you know...
Yeah.
Like... you know, had our well-respected places out here that we didn't want to try to do that. So we were like, how can we bridge this sort of like, this used to be a California, a Mexican restaurant. And like, how can we do something that has a little Mexican flair to it, but still speaks to who Ludo is
and to what the brand Trois is, you know, because Trois is a brand that we, the three of us have really, I mean, went at for a while now, a couple years.
You definitely know the food or the approach to food they're going to get when you go into Petit Trois or Trois Familia.
Yeah, or Trois Mac.
Trois Mac. How quick, I mean, that menu came together, the whole thing came together, I feel like 6 months?
Three.
Like at 3 months?
Yeah.
I mean, how did you put a menu together that hit so well?
The menu actually was the last thing that comes together.
The menu is still in the works.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's cool about...
We're only 3 weeks old.
I mean, it's... Things have come off. There's some new things coming on. It might even be on today. I gotta go see if they got that, the new sandwich on.
We're working on a duck confit thing right now.
I mean, is it just one of those places where you're just gonna be constantly evolving and changing? Or are you gonna try and... Because I know so much of social media is like... I see that. I want to go eat it. I want to go.
We'll settle into. We've already settled into some of those things, sort of like those you know, instant classics. I guess you could say right off the bat. But we've already taken some things off that we struggled with in the kitchen to produce from the start.
Is the honey coming back? Because that honey was the honey yogurt, the aerated yogurt.
Oh yeah.
You know what? The crowd didn't take to it.
Yeah, they were selling like to it. So like we're
we got it, blown away. Like it was so, and I'm not just, and the
you
fact
were
that
maybe
I'm,
you were one of seven that ordered it.
I mean, I'm telling you, I know the fact that I'm talking about yogurt, but like
no, it's cool.
But it was like it was so unexpected.
We thought it was great too, but like you know, like the people sort of like will tell you what they want to eat,
right?
You know, and like we're like, well, I guess we're not the yogurt place, you know? It's like, we thought it was, like, always, like, that good option for people to, like,
palate,
you know,
cleanser,
if you, if somebody didn't, they didn't want to get into something a little more decadent or spicy or, you know, they just wanted something a little straightforward. It was straightforward. It was, like, it was just aerated and it had honey in it. And it's all these things that you already eat, you know?
Yeah.
And, that was like a clown car. Did you see all those people
get
out of there? There was like 12 people that just got out of that car. That was amazing. Sorry.
No.
Sorry.
But I mean, like right off the bat, I mean, people have just taken to it. You know, it's like you scratch this itch that people didn't even know they had.
Yeah. I think like when people wanted it, right? They already did want it. They wanted chilaquiles.
Yeah.
It's just our interpretation. They wanted a burrito. Chicken milanesa, it's like everybody loves to eat chicken for lunch, you know, it's like it's just bright and cucumbers, it's refreshing, it's like ranch, it's kind of like, yeah, we made it with Maggie, but it doesn't seem, I guess to some people it seems like uber creative, and to us it seemed to be like we're we're trying to give you, make you happy and give you what you want and have a little fun with it, you know? And I think, like, that's what comes across, you know? It's egg dish. It's an egg sandwich, you know? Yes, it's done with good ingredients and good eggs and good bread and, you know, so all the integrity's there. It's just, you know, we kind of felt like, we knew what the community, they told us what they wanted.
I mean,
you know?
I think brunch has lost a lot of that integrity.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
you know, brunch wasn't always a bad thing. I think it just became bad because people didn't care about it. Like,
giant portions,
yeah.
Bad quality, not good recipes, you know, like, we came at it with, like, we still come at everything with, like, that sort of high-end cuisine mentality, and, like, we looked at it like, how can we make this really efficient, you know? Because once you do sit down after a little bit of a wait,
yeah,
you know, the food comes pretty quickly.
And the soundtrack is perfect for a hangover.
Thank you.
Who picked the music for this one?
Helen and I worked really hard on it. Ludo's throwing in his little touches. And I think everybody
is involved this time.
Everybody in the
mostly because of scheduling.
But everybody, but I mean, just on the playlist, I mean, everybody, you know, partakes in
Chase
it.
Chase is actually, the manager is getting
most
of
it now.
He's got super into it. Most of the records are actually his, believe it
it's
or not.
It's great. And it's a mix of records and iPod.
And then iPod, yeah. Just because, like, if it gets really, really pumping in there, they can't get distracted by flipping records.
Five songs doesn't get you.
Yeah, why'd the eggs burn? I was flipping from A to B.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you. Listen, guys, I want to thank you.
Thank you.
I know you guys are busy. Congrats on everything.
Thank you.
Where can people find you? What's the best way to find you online?
Or just to Google the restaurants, you know, Animal,
yeah.
Son of
just
a Gun.
Type in John and Vinny's into your computer, I guess. I don't know.
What comes one of those sites will always bring it to the other.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And we got a song from Blood Orange coming up next here on Snacky Tunes.
I feel unique, not yet complete. Your freezing eyes fall on me. Pour me, pour you, pour us. What's wrong with a little touch? I'm just a boy, so lonely. I am not your savior. Your savior, baby girl. I am not your savior. I am not your savior. One, two, three, four, grieve. You mean you're incomplete. And your freezing thighs warm me. Pour me, pour you, pour us. What's wrong with a little touch? I'm just a boy, I'm so lonely. I am not your savior. I am not your savior, baby girl. I am not your savior. Your savior. I am not your savior.
Perfect fade out. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm the other half of your host, Greg Bresnitz. Shout out to Blood Orange, who's going to do two big shows at the Apollo next week. Fundraiser, which should be pretty interesting. Want to welcome Arms.
Hello.
Back to the show. Do you want to do Arms? Do you want to do your real name?
You can call me Todd Goldstein if you want.
Oh, well, Arms is like... Okay.
Yeah.
Is it Arms or Todd Goldstein?
I like to say my name is Todd Goldstein and I record songs under the name Arms.
Oh, man, that's going to... Okay, we'll just say Todd.
Okay, just call me Todd.
Yeah. Actually, I probably won't even say the name afterwards.
Just call me, hey.
Just thank you at the end. Well, there's just two of us in here.
Oh, good, yeah. I'll know who you're talking to.
Yeah. Not Liz in the production room. Well, welcome back. For anybody who is a longtime listener... I think you were on one of the first 20 episodes of Snacky Tunes back in 2009.
That's an extraordinary factoid.
Which, as we were talking before, 2009 ended up being this kind of moment in indie rock history.
Yeah, I feel like that was the year a certain strain of indie rock broke. You know?
Yeah. Who were some of the contemporaries back then?
I think of the year of the big Grizzly Bear, Phoenix, Animal Collective, Dirty Projectors albums.
Yeah. Just like a very significant time and a sound.
Yeah.
And like still when like dance punk was still kind of doing its thing and like everyone kind of had a beat to it.
Yeah.
There was like always kind of dancing before dance music became what it is now.
And yeah. Making it cool for the indie kids to dance again.
Yeah. And now I think it's just like back to indie rock being indie rock and or whatever it's called. And now just dance is EDM and trap and whatever.
The indie kids stopped dancing.
Some of us just kept going to like minimal techno.
Right. They danced elsewhere.
So what's happened since that? How's it going?
It's good. It's going all right. Yeah.
What's the progression been since 2009? Where have you been? What have you been up to?
I guess in 2009 when I was on here was either at the point at which my old band Harlem Shakes was breaking up, and we had a sort of interesting run in that we were one of those bands that opened for everyone who eventually became famous, but never actually became famous ourselves, which is a really fun story to be able to tell.
Yeah.
You know,
what does that do to your psyche?
6 years later. At the time I was pretty conflicted and frustrated and unhappy about it. But now I look back and I almost feel like I dodged a bullet. You know what I mean?
I mean, unless it's forever, you could still soar to those great heights and then, at some point, most bands come back down.
Yeah, no, exactly. Being in a band is hard, and you know, being a big touring professional act is harder than ever. And I'm definitely not a gun for that these days, but I'm very happy to be just making music and putting it out and all of that stuff, you know.
Well, our friends from Turing Machine, who, you know, were a couple generations before us.
Yeah.
They were like, who the fuck makes money off being in a band? Like, we had day jobs and we made music and like, that was great.
That's how you do it.
Yeah. At some point, someone convinced a lot of artists that like, you didn't have to have a job and write music, and then it gets things really like complicated very quickly.
Yeah. I think a lot of people got their egos all psyched up, and we were sort of at the last. We're the last gasp of that whole thing happening. And then Harlem Shakes broke up in 2009, and our labels and all of the people that worked with us were all sort of pissed. And there was a brief, mourning on the internet, and then everybody forgot about it. And I have been continuing to make records as Arms since then.
And how do you find the balance between being a musician and having a full-time job?
Now I find it really easy and pleasurable. I have a full-time job that I really enjoy doing, and I in tiny little moments in between things, I eke out a little bit more music, and then somehow, you know, a couple of years pass, and I realize that I have a record, and, you know, that record hopefully, you know, gets some sort of release, and, you know, then I go back to just, you know, pushing out tiny little pieces of music at a time.
So do you record the records, like the record over what's like a time frame of, because most people that we talk to here, like, you know, it's after their first record, it's like the last year, the last 2 years of their life. Are you saying like it evolves?
Yeah. I finished a record not too long ago and it's coming out early-ish next year. It's called Patterns. And it's the third record. And this was done just kind of like, whenever it sort of made sense, where like some pieces would get done, there'd be a couple of songs, we'd jump into the studio, get the drums done, and then I would take it all back and record everything else myself. And just being sort of unhurried and leisurely about it and doing a couple things at a time. And then there was a certain point at which there was just like a critical mass of stuff. And we're like, oh, this is a record. And, you know, I did a last pass. We gave it to my friend Jason Finkel, who's an incredible engineer and who just like made it all sound like a record. And then suddenly it was done. And, you know, I think it's the best one. I'm extremely excited about it.
Let's hear a song.
Okay.
Yeah, let's hear a song. I have a couple more questions.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
But let's hear a song.
What's song this? First. I guess if I talked about that, I should probably do a song from it.
Yeah, I mean, that would like be the most logical thing.
Cool. This song is called Laughing Academy, and it's named after Tony Soprano's term for the loony bin, as it were.
Last night you were unraveling, alone in time traveling on needles and pins. I was someone that time forgot, leaving the oven on and frying the kids. I believe I did years of playing music left my eardrums liquefied. So lick your lips like envelopes and seal my fate inside. Shows no sign of waning in. You're barely containing it, and I feel it too. You're locked here in with the worried well of the summertime subway smell and the island's bloom. What are we gonna do? A life so fucking wonderful, a love so full and round. Sit here stitching patterns till those bastards rat me out.
Take such a long time to record songs, and you do it in piecemeal. Do you ever need to go back when you're finishing a record and like adjust some songs either for new techniques or new outlook on life? Or is it like you just a song, if it takes 5 years, something you wrote in year one and two, that's just kind of it?
Sometimes I'll go back and like nudge a verb, you know? It's just like, where there's like a pronoun that feels weird, and I'll just be like, and like do some other slightly different word there. But usually I think of the process of making a record as kind of like a snapshot of a certain time, even if it's like a particularly long time. And in the end, you're kind of like making all of these weird, disparate pieces feel like a singular statement. And that challenge is always interesting to me.
So do you see it more as like a snapshot of like the last few years, and like it's almost like a,
yeah,
like a living diary, if you will?
Yeah, sure, sure. Maybe not quite so literal, but
no.
Yeah, but like that, you know?
Yeah,
yeah.
Dearest album.
Yeah, exactly. Dear album.
Today I wrote a bus and saw a girl.
Exactly.
And you even note that like the way in which you approach your music, you can even like, I mean, when you're programming the record, do you program it in the time that you wrote it, or does that like not come into effect?
Radio dude, do you mean like track order?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. when I'm programming it, I don't. I put it all in something that feels like a narrative that is built into the music itself. Not, yeah, exactly.
Just because it's such an interesting way to write it. So another question is, have you written a song or found yourself writing a song that either presented like a self quandary or like a way of looking at thing that you actually solve a number of years later in another song?
That is an interesting question. Sure. Yeah. They all do. Yeah. I think each album I think the last record that I put out called Summer Skills, which I probably was just finishing up the last time I was here, was like my like anxiety record. It was my supernatural anxiety record, and I was definitely like trying to kind of work through a bunch of things that were happening internally at that time, blowing them up into these sort of weird made up stories with supernatural elements. And this album is much more sort of down to earth and immediate and aggressive and kind of natural. It came at a time when I had kind of like resolved a lot of the more sort of like Jewish guy anxiety, you know, lovable.
Oh, that never goes away.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry.
No,
I
know.
I'm so sorry. That never goes away.
Yeah. When I say it resolved a lot of, this isn't to say that the remaining ones still don't fester, you know, but it definitely like I was coming out of a something that I had kind of like and like, you know, shaking off the remains of that. And that was this record.
Harlem Shaking Off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That was exactly how that was.
You talked about stepping away from music. What was that like, or what was that decision?
Well, that was when I realized that how hard it is to make a living, and you know, doing it, and realizing that I didn't necessarily even want the life that being a professional musician would afford me. So I had a couple months of abject despair and confusion, and then I was like, well, shit, what do I actually want to do? And then I was like, oh yeah, I'll do graphic design because I like to draw. It was a pretty extraordinary thing because I was like, oh, this is great. I love it. I've never really done it before. I took some classes and I'm like, yeah, this is the shit. So, I do that, professionally. And in that time, stepping away from music was amazing because it took all the pressure off, and coming back into it now, it's just like a hobby. It's just like the funnest hobby that I happen to have a tiny handful of fans for, which is a way more exciting spot to be in than to be a struggling musician who only has a handful of fans.
Right.
You know.
Oh, interesting. All right. Well, let's hear another song.
Okay. This is a song from the last thing I put out, which is called EP 2, because this is the second EP, and the song is called Comfort. Pardon. Here we go. There's a tangle of chords where your body should be, and it's taking up space in the bed where you sleep. Why would you leave? What did you see? Now I
I hope that you're safe wherever you are, as you spin through the streets and you swim through your cars, fighting in bars, tilting at stars. Now I'm not the comfort you need, I'm a little white lie hidden up your sleeve. I'll run from these numbers and burn deep inside, till our bodies change their minds. I'm in it deep. Myself up, and I found a new scene where the kids are all right and the bathrooms are clean. I wouldn't leave, I'd never leave. So I wove through the crowd like a snake in the grass, like to dance like a child. But the party had passed, it wouldn't last. It couldn't last. Now aren't you the sum of my fears, with your rattling chains and your quickening years? I'll burn through these bridges and slam the open doors. I'm a monkey wrenching gears, howling for more, howling for more, howling for more, howling for more.
So the next record comes out in spring.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it done?
Yeah, it's done.
Okay.
Done.
Yeah. So does the writing process begin again after this?
I don't know if I'm ever going to make another pop album.
Really?
Yeah.
What type of record would you make?
I am really into trying my hand at sort of like abstract, ambient, and sort of electronic beat-driven stuff.
Like a Brian Eno record?
Yeah, like a Brian Eno record.
Okay.
Yeah. My cat's name is Brian Eno, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So, yes.
So, okay.
Yeah.
No coincidence?
Not at all a coincidence.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so then this could potentially be the fond farewell towards like a decade and a year of this type of music.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it might be. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going to be when I, you know, once the thing is out, maybe I'll feel like, oh, I could do this again. But at this point, I feel like unburdened of a need to write pop songs, which is kind of nice.
Yeah. I mean, if you scratch the itch, like, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So do you have any shows coming up?
Yeah. Well, one of the fun pieces of opening for all of the bands that eventually became famous, but not actually becoming famous myself, is that every once in a while we get to like throw something together and, you know, kind of like reconnect with all of these old buddies. So on Sunday the 13th of December at Poisson Rouge.
Oh, love those guys. Brett and Justin.
It is.
They're amazing men.
It's a wonderful spot, yeah. And it continues to do really wonderful things.
And like a really unique programming voice too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Really love what they do. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And to that point.
Yeah.
It's going to be the Dave Harrington Holiday Spectacular. Dave Harrington used to play in ARMS. Now he plays in the band Dark Side with Nicholas Jarre, and he's a genius.
One of my favorites.
Like, mine as well. He's a musician. And so we're putting a house band together and we're playing something like 25 or 30 holiday classics fronted by a different singer every time. And the singers include all of the folks from Tokyo Police Club and Tan Lines and Real Estate and Antlers,
yeah, I'll be
and
there.
Yesayer and yeah. Like the indie rock class of the mid-2000s on up. Sunny Day in Glasgow and a whole bunch of other wonderful weirdos. It's going to be really great.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds... Are there tickets still available?
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Listeners, you should definitely go.
You should definitely go. It's like the funnest thing I do all year. I'm so psyched.
I love Tokyo Police Club.
Yeah.
Darren and I saw their first show at Barry Ballroom, like, whenever that was. Or no, Mercury Lounge. I take that back. Mercury Lounge.
That was, was a classic show.
Long, long time ago when they still had the flags behind them.
Oh, nice. Wow. Yeah. That's a very deep
Yeah, show. You know. Yeah. So the record's coming out on Paper Garden. Shout out to them.
Yes. Wonderful folks.
Really lovely
folks. Special people.
Really special, amazing people. We had like a love fest with them this summer. Like, you're nice.
Yes.
But I want to make sure.
Sounds like them, yes.
I want to make sure we have time to get one more song in. So. Where can people find you? Where can they get the first records, EPs? How can they keep track of all information?
The ARM Songs, ARMSONGS, is the handle for Twitter and Facebook and all of that other stuff. SoundCloud. There's a really beautiful remix by Dave Harrington of an ARM song that just popped up on the SoundCloud. You should check that out. It's really wonderful. The record's going to be out next year, and I don't know. I'm generally available for... weddings and bar mitzvahs.
That's awesome. Yeah. Big shout out to Johnny and Vinny. Thanks for doing that. And Darren, I hope all is well in LA. Hello to my wonderful girlfriend, Arnella, because I can.
Yeah, no
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
And happy Hanukkah.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Nice.
I didn't bring my Nora. But yeah, happy Hanukkah, first night.
Didn't bring my Nora.
Didn't, yeah. Yeah. Was traveling lighter today than I expected. Yeah. All right, so what's the name of the song you're going to take us out with?
This is another song from the new record. It's called Stellary.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week for the last episode of the year, and then break.
Very exciting. Thanks, okay. Greg. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for being back.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Okay.
Close calls, near winds, cling to your skeleton. Arms down and invite me in when there's nothing there for you. Close songs, wear your hair long like it keeps you safe. Headlights blinking, I've gone back to my own ways. Hand starts reeling and my heart stops beating, and I'm outside standing alone. A block so calm, but I can't help feeling like a short shock ready to blow. Got me trembling in your hands, got me shaking in my shoes. Tangled in your tangled limbs, I forgot what forgetting is, so I'll rely on you. Hotels set your bones well with their songs and saves. 6 weeks still you can't sleep in the bed we made. Shoes, squeeze that lemon in my eye, rub that salt upon my wounds, and you freeze me where I stand with your complicated shoes. I must admit I've never been confronted with a creature so lovely, just know what to do.
This program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.